For February 19th, 2007, will come to order. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2707. We have some amendments to consider. Actually, an amendment to consider. Paul?
Mr. Chair, the committee has before you the House Bill 2707-3 amendments. And these were the amendments that grew out of your discussion last Friday. And what these dash 3 amendments do is, first of all, they combine the dash 1 and dash 2 that you saw on Friday. As you recall, what those amendments do, actually the dash 2, creates the Oregon Rainy Day Fund. And that's section 1 of the bill. Has the triggers in the fund. Section 2... on page 2 is the dash 1 amendment, which sets the increase in the corporate income and excise tax estimate to $975 million. That's on line 7 there. And then goes, as in the previous version you looked at on Friday, sets those, sends the calculation based on the difference between actual collections and the close of session estimate into the rainy day fund. Unless actuals exceed the new estimate, then you have a 2% calculation again. Section 4 deals with the ending balance, which you discussed and was part of the amendments that you looked at earlier. The Section 6, starting on line 18, is new, and that incorporates some elements that were in Senate Bill 49 that you discussed, and actually saw those amendments in another form. Section 6 sets a 10% cap on the amount of general fund revenues that will go into the new Oregon Rainy Day Fund.
I think it's actually 48.
Section 48.
Senate Bill 48.
Senate Bill 48, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Then the Education Capital Construction Fund is created, and any excess above the 10% would flow into that fund. It specifies that the Capital Construction Fund is for projects for public education, so a broad definition of education for uses of that fund. And I'm sorry, one thing I did skip was page 2, line 1, was the other element that you discussed, which is the Legislative Assembly may not appropriate more than two-thirds of the amount in the Oregon Rainy Day Fund for any one biennium.
Yeah.
So that was the other element that was in the previous bill. So the key elements are the cap, the overflow in the Education Capital Fund, and then the restriction on the amount that could be withdrawn in any one biennium to two-thirds of the fund balance. You also had a discussion on interest earnings, and we continue to work on that in another venue. We have a couple of bills in which this issue has come up, and so we'll have something ready for you on that in a few weeks.
And if I recall, Paul, correctly, we're going to deal with that issue in a broader sense than simply on this measure. But when it's all done, we'll set that up in such a way that the that this fund will accumulate interest.
Yes, Mr. Chair, the way that the fund will be set up is that the fund balances are available for cash flow management purposes, and which is what the bill does now. But then the further specification would be that at some point there's an imputed rental income to those balances, and then those will be transferred to the fund itself and not available for general purposes. So those balances will be available for cash flow purposes, but not for budgetary purposes.
Thank you. And this that would apply, of course, to several other funds as well, in addition to this one.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Representative Gelser.
Yes, I'd like to move the Dash 3 amendments, please.
Thank you. Representative Gelser moves the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2707. Let me just say before discussion that I think this conforms to the issues that were raised on Friday and deals with all of those issues except the interest issue. And as further conversation went along, it became obvious that discussions with the treasurer and legal issues need to be dealt with before we can deal with that. But I, as I indicated on Friday, we will be bringing a bill to deal with the interest rate issues to the committee. Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, is this the appropriate time to ask a couple questions of staff?
Sure.
Thank you. With your permission. Paul, if this had been enacted, say, 10 years ago, what would 10% of the general fund be this biennium? What is the target rainy day amount?
Target cap.
Yeah, the target.
Representative Berger, you know, I distributed a proposed dash two amendment last time that had a little table. So that shows you a 1%. It's not exactly the same definition, but very close. This is 1% of appropriations. But you can see that if it's the prior biennium, you'd be looking at an 0507 number of 116 million times 10, so about 1.16 billion.
Billion.
And if I could add to that, of course, this would be in addition to the current Education Stability Fund, which has a 5% cap.
Well, that was my question. So you would essentially have both simultaneously. One is capped at 5% and one is capped at 10%. So potentially you could have a 15% ending reserve when fully implemented. One for education. That's where I'm going with this.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and what was the downturn last time?
Mr. Chair, the actual revenues, if you exclude the appropriation credit bonds, actual revenues came in about 12% below the previous biennium and about 20.5% below forecast.
Thank you.
Are we talking about general fund?
Representative Berger, yes. I'm talking about the general fund revenue forecast. And the actual numbers came in, if you adjust for legislative actions, about 20%, a little over 20% below the close of session estimate that was done.
Did you want to speak to that issue?
No. I just want to point out that this is you cannot predict the future, Mr. Chair, and I don't want it to be forgotten that while we're talking about 10%, we're really talking about 15%. And that is a very large amount of money to take out of the economy and have it sit being used in equity stock or whatever it is we're investing it in and not using it towards any other positive thing to build the business of the state. And it's a very large amount, much larger than the 10% that we're, you know, 10% cap seems good until you realize it's really 15% we're talking about in here.
Thank you, Representative Berger. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of items. Wanted to confirm with staff that the dash ones and dash twos that we looked at on Friday are, in fact, all fully incorporated in the dash three at this point.
That's correct, Representative Butler.
And the second issue, the interest of the fund that this still leaves open. Tell us what are some of the possibilities of the resolution of that in the other bill that we're talking about maybe coming forward.
Representative Butler, the way this bill is drafted, it corrects one of the main concerns that has come up in the general fund, and that is imbalances in cash flow. And this, the way the bill is set up, this will help address that. What it doesn't do is while doing that at the same time, impute and accrue interest back to this individual account that is within the general fund. So it's a sub-account within the general fund. So that's the language we are working on now in a number of other contexts as well, so that you can have accounts within the general fund that the treasurer can use so that we don't increase our external borrowing costs. At the same time, you have a mechanism for for accruing those interest earnings to a specific purpose and not to general fund purposes.
But, Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that presently we already have in statute the opportunity for the Treasurer to borrow under TAN's arrangement. Could we not address that very simply by a TAN's borrowing arrangement, inter-account borrowing, and allow that interest to accrue just as if we were going to the market for that TAN's interest?
Representative Butler, my understanding is we do have that authority, and you gave the Treasury that authority back in 2002. However, there is a external cost associated with doing that. And so the idea is to try to minimize those external costs by allowing the Treasurer flexibility within the state accounts.
Okay, and finally, just and this has nothing to do directly with the bill, but the ongoing negotiations. Mr. Chair, I understand that there are ongoing negotiations between a couple of caucuses in the building to try and resolve some of the concerns relating to the concern whether or not it was originally 1% or 2% set aside, and the other triggering events, as well as the total amount of the kicker versus an adjusted amount of the kicker. Do we have any information on those ongoing negotiations prior to the time that we vote on the adoption of the amendment as proposed by Representative Gelser?
Well, let's take them in order. The first item you raised was the 1%, 2% item, I think. And I'm not aware of any negotiations going on that item. The second item was what now?
Relative to the total taking of the current corporate kicker or the adjusted amount as recommended under the OSIP program.
I know that there are positions on that. I'm not aware of any negotiations going on around them.
Thank you.
Further discussion on the Dash 3 amendments. The Dash 3 is, as you may note, actually replaced the bill. Representative,
one quick question for Paul. Paul, I just want to verify that the walls that are within the walls that are established determining whether or not the money can be drawn, which I know are identical to the Education Stability Fund, are they any more liberal, any less liberal, if you will, than the federal recession definition? And my thought is they're spot on, but I just want to verify that.
Yes. Well, let me address the first point in terms of being identical. Remember that there is a difference here in the way these are spelled out versus the Education Stability Fund. The way it uses the same triggers, and it says that they are or, so that you could pull money out if one of these triggers are met, but you can do that with a majority vote. Under the Education Stability Fund, it still requires a 3/5 vote once those triggers are met. And then the other stipulation is that the governor can declare an emergency and with a 3/5 vote can withdraw money out, and that is that's in the Education Stability Fund. So that's the same. So the difference is on the triggers are met, and that takes a majority vote to pull it out. In terms of the definition of a recession, the dating of recessions actually is done by an organization called the National Bureau of Economic Research, and they use a whole series of indicators, but the one that we most know about is the gross domestic product, which kind of a rule of thumb, if you have 6 months of decline, that's termed a recession, and that has been pretty consistent historically. Unfortunately, we don't have good quarterly data on gross state product, which would be nice because that would be a comparable measure. So what the Stability Fund has done and what this bill does is use payroll employment as a proxy or a measure for economic activity. And when you have 6 months of declining employment, that has been historically identified with a recession. Last time we had that occur, of course, was in 2001 when we had a recession. The previous time was in 1991. We had 6 months of declining employment, also associated with a mild recession. So it's been consistent historically with the time periods we've had national recessions.
Mr. Chair, one quick follow-up. And Paul, would these standards be consistent with what the Federal Reserve Board of Governors typically uses as their and I realize it's not exactly black and white, but is pretty consistent with the Fed uses for their definitions and triggers for recession as well.
Yes, the time frame of 6 months is a consistent one, and the real definition is a period of declining economic activity, an actual contraction. So it would be associated with that, yes.
Thank you.
Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, on the Dastrey amendments, in listening to Paul, on line 11, A is the first, you know, sort of statement that has to happen, but there is no or after it. Is that a problem?
No. The or is after B, and therefore it's A or B or C. Or, rather than sub A, then sub B. The size of the letters matters here.
Well, Paul said each one of those stand alone.
That's
didn't
correct.
You indicate?
Yes.
But why is there no or then?
Well, ironically, Representative Berger, they actually had the same discussion in the Senate. And the conclusion was that grammatically, that it basically, as the chair pointed out, that the or is implied after the A.
So they made the same drafting error twice.
Well, it grammatically, it's like X, comma, Y, comma,
no,
or
Z. No, there's two ors.
You get B and C, both with ors.
Both B and C.
Well, let's back up for just a second, because I want to make sure we parse this correctly. Remember, there's a small letter A on line 7. Small letter A on line 7 goes all the way through line 19. Okay? Within that, lines 8 through 19 have three subsections for small letter A. The three of them are hooked together with the or on line 14. So, you with me so far?
Got it.
All right. Then the small letter A and small letter B are hooked together with the or on line 19.
Got it.
And that's the reason for this. I know it's a little confusing, but I think it's grammatically correct.
I understand.
Okay. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one final concern that I have, and that is a constitutional concern. My understanding that any time that the legislature is going to monkey with the kickers, that if we do so outside of the sidebars that provided it within the kicker, that we've got to declare an emergency. I need to know, certainly this declares an emergency that we've got to do this in a hurry, but what is the emergency we are declaring? What is the declaration of an emergency?
The immediate preservation of public peace, health, and safety, as the bill says, on line 30 on page 3.
Mr. Chair, I recognize that's why we are in the process of attempting to take the kicker, but my concern is that a reserve fund is not for the immediate protection of the public peace and the health and safety, but there has got to be, according to the Constitution, an actual declaration of an emergency of some kind.
And Mr. Butler, what I think what I said was that Section 8 does that. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, I did ask counsel about that, and that was their reaction, was that Section 8 does that.
Thank you. Is there further discussion of the -3 amendments? Is there objection to the -3 amendments? Hearing no objection, the -3 amendments are adopted. Representative Rosenbaum?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 2707 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Rosenbaum moves House Bill 2707 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Representative Berger.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think there's been plenty of discussion about a rainy day proposal, and certainly I am a big proponent of rainy day proposals that are well thought out, that have had grounding in a full discussion, and that have some elements, many of the elements that are in here, but other elements that are not. I am very disturbed by rushing this thing out, rushing it through this committee. without any discussion of, for instance, the three-fifths vote provision that isn't in here, that is in the other, with any discussion other than me just mentioning it, is how this articulates with the other rainy day thing that we already have out there that nobody ever seems to talk about. I would much prefer other components such as a 2%, which was mentioned in the testimony we heard on this bill, but hasn't been mentioned since. I think this is a hurry-up job on a major effort and can't support it for that reason.
Thank you, Representative Berger. Other discussion? Representative Butler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I too am going to continue to express some concern. I said early on that if we had the major portion of industry come forward, and certainly we had the folks that represent the largest industries in the state of Oregon come forward, whereas the other proposal that is being considered in the building was a slightly different proposal that did not take this kicker away from every business in the state of Oregon. I am concerned about using just standard statutory language for an emergency, declaring an emergency basically based upon the fact that we have been unable as a legislature to control our appetite for the desires to spend more money than what we are actually receiving, to the extent that we've been unable to set aside monies in a reserve, and consequently we're basically, I've likened this to the fact that going to a bank and going to the first teller and saying I want money in a bag, and then going to the second teller and handing the money back over and saying, look, I am a good saver, this is my money, put it on deposit, and then glorify me because I have been such a good saver. I've taken the money from somebody that I really didn't, from where it didn't really belong to me. My concern is that that kind of declaration of emergency is insufficient to make this really based upon what the voters had originally contemplated in voting the kicker law into the Constitution. The second concern that I have is that I thought we had some ongoing discussions in the building which could assist us in that eventual two-thirds, and again, the alphabet soup group that we had here said we'd like that to be a bipartisan vote. And what's happening is that by virtue of the fact that we're unwilling to discuss that, that we need to push this through on an emergency basis and declare this emergency accordingly, that what we have is a non-bipartisan approach. So I would like to express those concerns and make sure that you understand that that is a concern as we move this bill forward.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Further discussion? Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, I believe that this bill is one that we absolutely need to have. That I don't really see that we have glossed over anything or rushed it through. I mean, there was an attempt to move this bill on Friday, and when objections were raised and technical points were brought up, we said, okay, we'll fix those, we'll wait. We had we had a lot of testimony about this. We had a broad coalition of business groups. On the Senate side, I believe, when they heard Senate Bill 48, the small business folks, NFIB, got up over there and said that they supported that bill without a small business kicker provision in it. So I think that their support has been made pretty clear, too. I think that Oregonians deserve a much more stable situation than we have had, and that this is the opportunity to do that. I think that we need to pass this bill, and I will be pleased to vote for it today.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Brown?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I have many of the same concerns that Representative Berger and Butler have, and I also agree with Representative Rosenbaum in the part where she says that Oregon absolutely deserves a rainy day fund. I'm convinced that Oregon not only deserves a rainy day fund, but will get one this legislative session in a bipartisan fashion. I have great concerns about this bill for a couple of reasons, though, Mr. Chair. One is the perception and it's been jammed through on an expedited basis. And the only thing, this bill is not a referral, yet the only thing I can surmise is that there is some discussion somewhere that I'm not privy to, but to take this bill and to turn it into a referral, hence the speed at which we're pushing it through this committee. This potentially is one of the biggest issue items that we will look at this legislative session, yet we've had an hour and a half of discussion on it, and I just don't think that's the appropriate treatment. I think we lose a couple of factors, a couple of elements, with Mr. Chair. First of all, I know there's people negotiating this to make this a bipartisan deal because we all want a rainy day fund. I'm worried that the accelerated way we're looking at this sort of stops that in the bud, if you will, sort of limits that negotiation. Secondly, and I guess most important from my perspective, is that when we're talking about the corporate kicker, whether it's a one-time basis or some sort of a permanent basis, it's a vital variable when we look at overall comprehensive tax reform, the sort of tax reform that we need to make sure the state does have a sustained growing economy for schools, public safety, and everything else. And my worry is that by jamming this through and leaving those discussions, those negotiations about the larger tax reform, we're doing ourselves a disservice. So I agree with Representative Rosenbaum when she talks about this is good policy for that. The rainy day fund is good policy for Oregon. This bill has many good elements. I grant you that, but I still think that we are rushing the process and not getting the perfect bipartisan piece of legislation that we all want. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further discussion? Well, let me just say that this bill has been under discussion and negotiation for some weeks now. The business community, some of whom you heard from on Friday, were involved in those conversations. They were direct and, I think, fruitful. The bill is a result of that. You heard from them on Friday that they accept the bill. There are things that they might like differently, but they prefer the bill as it is over no bill. And I think that was very clear from the discussion we heard Friday. It wasn't just a couple of business groups, but there was a whole alphabet soup, and I think I read the whole list of groups that they were supporting, and it was groups representing large businesses, groups representing small businesses, groups representing businesses that see a need for major tax reform in Oregon, and businesses that are less interested in that. As far as I can tell, all the business groups that all the business groups that were represented ended up saying after the conversation that they supported this bill. One of the points that several of you have made is the issue about it being a bill rather than a constitutional amendment, and that it's only a piece of a tax reform. I think no one in this building should mistake that tax reform is going to take more than one step. It will take many steps. There will be a number of pieces to it, some of which we know pretty clearly and others of which we see only vaguely at this point. So it will take a while to get tax reform completed. The reason that we brought this bill and that I wanted to hear the bill today and vote on it today was that this is a part of the step in getting us there to the long-term result. The business community did say that despite the fact that this was a statute rather than a constitutional change, and I understood the issues that separate those two, they were willing to support the bill because of the recognition that this is one piece in the movement toward long-term tax reform that I think pretty much everybody on the committee agrees we need to be moving toward. I'm disappointed, I have to say, that it appears not to be acceptable to all, but I think we need to go ahead. And with that, I would ask the clerk to call the roll.
Representative Berger.
No.
Representative Bloom.
No.
Representative Butler.
No.
Representative Gelson.
Aye.
Representative Olson.
No.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, and the bill, having reached the required majority, is the motion is carried, and the bill will go to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair, I'm serving notice of possible minority report.
I thought you might, Representative Butler. Thank you. Pending further notice, I will carry the bill. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2107 and move to a work session on House Bill 2210.
This is that.
I remember.
Yeah.
The big amendment.
Yeah.
It should be the other two.
So. Oh, okay. All right. Great.
Did you pass that also?
When you're in the pass line, so I always told people, man, if you want to stay out, you better be watching me.
Is that what you told them when you flagged them down for speeding?
No, I always say, well, thank you for giving me business today.
Yeah.
Appreciate it much.
Is this the one with you?
We're going to put you in.
Okay. Thank you. I'd like to come back to order. We have a very significant amendment, which, as I read it, actually replaces the bill called the Dash A7s. And I'd like Chris to go through those with us and explain them so that we know what it is that we're on. I apologize for not getting them to you earlier. We didn't get them until halfway through the lunch hour today.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Dash 7 is a rewrite of the bill, so it would be for readability reasons. It makes a number of technical changes, and at least to start with, I wanted to hit some of those highlights. First of all, it fills in the blanks for the producer credit. The producer credit, there were 10 pieces depending on the item being produced. The credit per unit varies, and you can see that on page 5 of the bill. And
these are based on the recommendation that we received in testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you.
All of the changes in the Dash 7 come from the sponsors of the bill, from the governor's office. The next thing it does is it moves the property tax exemption to the Rural Renewable Energy Development Zone program, and you can see that on page 8. In the prior version of the bill, there was a simple statute reference that placed the property tax exemption in the SIP program. That has been changed to this program. And rather than a listing of the statute, there are a couple of sections that pertain to that. And in a number of places throughout the bill, wherever there's a reference, or almost in many of the places where there's a reference to biodiesel, there's a reference to other renewable diesel, which is defined on page 12. And there are a number of places throughout the statute where that has changed. An example of that is at the bottom of page 12, lines 26 and 27, the new languages and other renewable diesel. That's kind of a theme throughout the bill. That's many of the changes. It also sets the consumer credit equal to 50 cents a gallon, and that is on page 21. In the prior version, it was a language that may not be more than 50 cents per gallon. This language sets it equal to 50 cents per gallon. Page 21, line 3, for example. And the other major piece, it aligns the effective and sunset dates for the producer and consumer credits so that each of them takes effect for tax years beginning on or after January 1, 2007, and sunsets January 1, 2013. And there are a number of other minor changes, Mr. Chair. I don't know if would you like to walk through them individually, or
I think we should. We're asking people to look at a bill on work session today that they haven't actually had a chance to review it all, and I'd like to make certain that we do have a chance to review it.
Sure. Is Jackie Dinkfelder by any chance available to take a look at these?
I'm getting a nod from Paul. It would be useful if we knew that she had reviewed the bill and the amendments and that they met with the concerns that her committee raised. That would be helpful, would it not, Representative Butler?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dinkfelder has done an enormous amount of work in the interim for the past 2 years relative to this issue. I'd hate for us today to not to bypass some of the work that she's done.
I completely agree. Thank you. All right. So let's go ahead and go over the other changes in the bill as well, if you would.
Okay. Starting on the front page, line 16, the term rangeland was added. It had said forest woody debris. Now it says forest or rangeland woody debris. On line 19, the capital B was added to the list, the wood material from hardwood timber described in ORS 321.2673. That was added to that list.
What is that kind of hardwood? Do we know?
I do not know, Representative Butler. I can look into that.
Okay. 323. Right here. Okay.
On page 5, lines 2 through 16, those dollar or the unit amounts were filled in. For example, line 2, 5 cents per pound. Line 4, 90 cents per pound. In line 10, the word rangeland was added, so now it reads forest or rangeland property in Oregon. On page 7, section 8A has received a number of a rework. This is the section, it was the prior section 9A, and it identified the Economic and Development Department as conducting a job study. That has been changed to the Department of Energy, and the number of the items to be included in that study have been modified. I didn't mark exactly which ones those were, unfortunately.
Which line is that? I'm sorry, Chris.
That's section 8A.
Section 8A.
This is the whole thing.
Page 7.
Page 7. Thank you.
The whole section has been reworked to include it's a much more comprehensive list of things to be studied, of items to be included in the study.
Hmm. Yeah. I think these are things that we either now measure or that we plan to measure anyway. Yeah, I'm getting a nod from the Department of Energy.
And many of these items came up, Mr. Chair, in the discussion last time with the bill.
Yes.
They came up during the testimony. Page 8.
While you're looking, let me describe ORS 321.267, which is that hardwood definition. Basically, this is a section in definition of forest land and assessment issues, but the subsection that we're talking about talks about the land used for the purpose of growing hardwood timber, including but not limited to hybrid cottonwood. If the land is intensively cultivated, the timbers is of a species marketable as fiber. The timber is harvested on a cycle with the 12 years of planting, and the land and timber are subject to intensive agricultural practices. I've summarized rather than read, but you can see the point, what they're trying to get at with referring to that section. Go ahead.
This would be all the hybrids that the state's been working towards.
This is another way of getting to cellulose,
yeah.
Other than using wheat or things of that sort.
Great. Thank you. Thank you.
Page 8, line 7, the collection of sections entitled Rural Renewable Energy Development Zones is all new, and that is sections 9 and 9A. This replaces prior, there was just a single reference to the statutes referencing the SIP program. And so both 9 and 9A are new.
And that, Mr. Chair, that, so that I understand, that gives us the expanded definition of where these kinds of extraction industries can then take place closer to some of the products that are available for the manufacturing of biodiesel and other non-fossil diesel extracts.
That's my understanding, Representative.
Thank you.
On page 11, line 2, the word consisting was added. Prior it said motor fuel comprised of monoalkyl esters. Now it says consisting, so just a component of the vehicle. On page 12, lines 8 through 13 contain a definition of other renewable diesel. And then also on page 12, lines 26 and 27, the terms and other renewable diesel are added. And that is, as I mentioned before, one of the themes where there's biodiesel is referenced, that phrase will be included. Page 13, lines 9 and 10, now include the or other renewable diesel.
And help my recollection, this is to deal with the reality that we're pointing at a moving target. As the means of developing these products grows, some of them may not fit the exact definition of biodiesel, but in fact may do very similar things with other organic, non-petroleum kinds of products.
That's my understanding.
Right. That's right. And they're not ready yet, so rather than leave them out of the bill, we've included them this way.
Go ahead.
On page 14, lines 12 through 14, it has been added, or other renewable diesel with at least 2% renewable component by volume. That language is added. Lines 18 and 19, same language, or other renewable diesel with at least 5% renewable component by volume. And again, on lines, starting on line 20 through 22, or other renewable diesel with more than 5% renewable component by volume. And then lines 24 and 25, or other renewable diesel. And then again on line 26, or other renewable diesel. On page 15, starting line 1, or renewable component in other renewable diesel was added. And then on line 4, marine engines or home heating were added, and I believe that was also brought up in response to the discussion last time. Line 14, after biodiesel or other renewable diesel, and that same phrase is added in lines 18, 19, and 21. On page 17, line 14, it used to read complies with. Now it reads contains ethanol that complies with. So the contains ethanol is new. Page 18, lines 1 and 2, that last part after the comma is added, and that complies with ASTM International Specification D4806 has been added. Page 20, lines 28 and 29, the phrase is equal to, this is the consumer credit. Prior it had said was no more than, now it is said simply equal to 50 cents per gallon. And then on page 21, that same phrase is added to lines 3 and 9. On page 13, line 1.
Page what?
Page 23. I'm sorry, I missed you.
You're going the wrong way there. You're going to panic.
For a minute, we thought we were going backwards.
I was speaking while I was reading the date changed to 2013. Prior, it was 2012.
That was to make it consistent, wasn't it?
Yes, and actually, as I read that, I may have skipped, not to go back.
Giant step backwards for mankind. Move to biodiesel and other renewable diesel.
Another renewable.
On page 5, it's the producer credit is now effective January 1, 2007. It had been that the producer credit was effective 2008 through 2013, and the consumer credit was effective 2007 to 2012. They've been aligned so that now they were effective 2007 through 2013.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Butler.
Chris, is there a fiscal associated with that by taking that back to the beginning of this year? Are there actual producers? Or?
Mr. Vice Chair, that does affect the revenue impact a little bit.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. There are a couple more.
Okay.
But many pages down. Page 36, line 28 and 29, the new language is the not permitted and then the ORS reference. And then that same change occurs a couple other places.
Do we know what that change means?
Not yet, Mr. Chair. I need to look into it.
Would you like to go through?
Yes.
consumption at the forum.
But these sections pertain to the maintaining the EFU zoning for farmland.
Anything further? I have to tell you, I'm pretty good at reading statutes, but I can't find 215-203-2BL. It seems to end at K. I wonder what we were attempting to refer to here.
Or subsection 1, so this section.
Representative Dingfelder.
Yeah, and I'm going to ask
you. Yep, come forward, please. Let's get it on the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Chair.
Thank you very much for coming today. We appreciate that.
Yeah, well,
when we're trying to do a complete redo, it's important that we yeah. get the details right.
And I apologize. I just received these about 15 minutes ago myself. So much of what you're seeing in these sections pertain to land use issues regarding EFU use, and we worked with the Oregon Farm Bureau and LCDC, so we're going to try to clarify what this reference is in regards to.
For the record, Katie Fast, Oregon Farm Bureau. The addition on page 36 of bringing in ORS 125203, subsection 2, subsection B, subsection L, is that is for a conditional use permit, and it's referring to where you would be permitted to not have a permit. So that's a new section of the statute that it's referring to. That's why it ends in K. L is actually a new piece that the bill brings in on page 29, lines 21 through 27.
Thank you. That does help explain it.
So that's yes. why it's not in the current statute.
There it is. I was just looking in the wrong place.
So in those cases, that would be an outright use where a farmer wouldn't need to file a permit to make those land use changes. Then on page 36, that's when you would need to get a permit from your county, and then there's additional changes where you would need a conditional use permit if you don't meet those constraints.
Thank you. That
You're
helps
welcome.
A lot. I don't remember to look in the statute book for a section and,
well,
and not be able to find it. Now you've explained why. I appreciate that.
Well, and this is a whole new element that we found out. We wanted to make sure that our land use laws were consistent for the processing of biofuels in EFU land.
Right. The point of this piece, if I understand it, is that farmers need to be allowed to process the crops into biofuels, and these limitations on page 29 don't allow them to sneak in a big manufacturing plant on farmland.
That's correct. On page 29, that's just an outright use for farmers for processing their own crops or processing the purchased crops into fuel they're going to use on farms. The changes on page 36 allow for permitted use when it's in conjunction with farming in the area, and then additional changes allow for a conditional use permit when it doesn't meet the other constraints for an outright and a permitted.
But those require review by somebody.
The conditional use permit requires a public notice and comment period.
County land use process.
And right, the yeah. regular county land use
correct.
Process.
Correct.
Thank you. I suspect there are a bunch of other questions. Have you had a chance, Representative Dingfelder, to review the bill?
I got it 15 minutes ago as I walked into my committee, unfortunately. So I have been walking through this as far as I can tell, everything that we had submitted did get in here. Unfortunately, this is once again another rewrite, so I'm having to read through it again to make sure that it's consistent. But and I also know the Department of Energy has been looking at it to make sure that we are consistent with our other language. And so far, it's everything that we had put in did get in here, which is a good thing.
Great.
We walked this committee through these proposed amendments last time we were here about the biofuels definition, making sure the agroforestry was in here, the changes to make rangeland consistent, and that's on the first page there. And then the agroforestry is referenced in ORS. That's page 1, line 19, and that's that definition. We want to make sure poplar harvest would apply, actually, for the credit, for the producer tax credit. And so that was such that new reference, which is in there. And I think you've had a walkthrough on all the others.
We have. And pretty much those changes are things that we heard about in testimony.
Correct.
Thank you. Further questions? All right. Discussion of the we don't have a motion on the floor at this point, I don't believe.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
I would move the dash A7 amendments to House Bill 2210, dated 2/19/07.
Thank you. Representative Butler moves the dash A7 amendments to House Bill 2210. Is there further discussion of these? Are we ready? Okay. All right. Is there any objections to the A7s? Seeing none, the A7s are adopted. Now, let's see, I've got those somewhere. Well, Representative Butler, okay, did you want to describe your proposals, Representative Butler?
Mr. Chair, I think that the A8s were some items that we had discussed with the Department of Energy, and they told us at that time that they had the ability to come forward and do the necessary assessment whether biofuel and ethanol demand increases the price of crops, affects the profit margins on the biofuel and ethanol producers. More than anything else, the concern was that was expressed in committee that we make sure that what we're doing does not inordinately make less available some of the other crops, that we do have the necessary crop land to continue forward to produce not only the feedstocks for these operations but also the food staples. And a list was handed out to Mike Graney, and he indicated that, yes, that in his conjunction working with the OECD as well as the Department of Agriculture, that his department, the Department of Energy, would be working with those other departments to make sure that they could consistently address all of these issues. And for that reason, Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill or the dash A8 amendments to House Bill 2210.
I'm sorry. Would you repeat that?
Mr. Chair, I move the dash A8 to House Bill 2210.
Representative Butler moves the dash A8s to House Bill 2210. Let me say that the proponents of the bill don't believe these amendments are necessary, that in fact the agencies are going to handle the issues that are contained in these amendments. And I would say that comment also applies to the dash 9s, but in a slightly different way. I'll deal with that one if and when those are moved. Is there further discussion about the A8 amendment?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, in providing this list to Mr. Graney, he did recognize it as being a certain issue that they would need to address. I continue to be concerned about what happens as we move more of our production, our material production in the state of Oregon. There's still a lot of skepticism about this whole issue of how much it takes to actually produce 1 gallon of biofuels, but what this does is this gives us the additional reporting process that's necessary, particularly to make sure that the food staple supply is not interrupted. And that has been a major concern to folks that have come forward. Again, and if you'd like, Mr. Graney could come forward, but it's my understanding that they don't have any objection to this. This is something that they are prepared to do, but not within the bill itself.
Thank you. I think I'd like to get him on the record. Mr. Graney?
Good afternoon.
The reason I raise it now is that it was my understanding that you were happy with the A7s and didn't want any other additions, but I'm perfectly happy to be staying corrected if that's the case.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Mike Rainey from the Department of Energy. I think the issues that are in the Dash 8s are picked up in Section 8A from the Dash 7s. It's certainly our intent to include such issues in our study. I guess actually the only difference I really see is the A8s, as they are, would have us doing two studies. And I would, if you adopted the A8s, I'd ask you to let us do one study that covers all these issues. But I think that Representative Butler, the issues that you raised with me the other day, I think Section 8A, excuse me, gives us the authority to address those as well as the ones that are in the A8 amendments. It would be our intent to do so.
And Mr. Chair, I see that in on page 7 of the appended and adopted A7s on page 7, lines 28 and 29, that in fact that the feedstock production, the price of commodity crops, and the cost of food staples is included. So in that regard, it does. But as long as Mr. Graney is willing, and I think this language, the A8 or the 8A language, was appended as a result of some of the concerns that we actually expressed in committee and came out of that. And I did provide Mr. Graney with a list of those at the time, and I think those are now appended in there. So perhaps this does, but I does accomplish. I just want to make certain that Oregon has the ability to do what it says it's going to do and not interrupt the supply of food that we're concerned about, of wholesome, nutritious, and cost-effective production of other agricultural products that Oregonians have come to rely on.
Okay, so now are you satisfied that that the material on page 7 of the A7s takes care of this issue?
I think it appears that it does.
Sure, it sure looks like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, does cover it in a... I think that the on page 7 it actually delineates, probably lining the things out in a more orderly fashion. Again, as long as the concerns that are expressed, Mr. Chair, are there, I would remove my motion at that time that the A8s be appended.
You're asking to withdraw your motion?
I'm withdrawing my
motion. Oh, thank you. Representative Butler withdraws his motion on the A8 amendments. Before we go on, I should indicate that the proponents of the measure have been in contact with me and perhaps others, and they are not interested in the measure, in the material contained in the A9 amendments, just as a matter of information for the committee. Partly because of drafting and also partly because of the concern that this might affect the mandate. The mandate, of course, being a pretty important piece of the bill from the agricultural interest point of view in order to go forward with committing themselves to growing these crops and making these changes. So what's your pleasure, Representative Berger?
May I speak to the Dash 9s?
Certainly.
Mr. Chair, I think that there's some important points in the Dash 9s, and I would move their adoption. The important section is to put a sunset on this so that future legislatures are forced to come back and talk about whether this program worked. We're initiating a huge program here. And without any further, let's go and do it and then do a few studies, but there's nothing in it that forces this legislature to come back and review it, and a sunset does that. And for all the talk we've had, it's about tax expenditures and the need to always review these things. This is a perfect example where I think the legislature needs to come up and assess it, and that's why I'm asking for a sunset in here in the Section 19A of the Dash A's. The other piece is we heard clear testimony in other states that there have been significant problems when something goes terribly wrong and the governor does not have the ability to do anything about it on an emergency basis, and that's the 19B one, we heard testimony about how that had happened in Michigan when all the biodiesel just jammed up and the trucks weren't moving. And the governor had no opt-out to get that component out of the fuel supply of the state. So I think it's an important emergency provision, and I think it's very important that we put them in. And I would move the dash 9.
Well, dash 9s have been moved. Representative Berger moves the dash 9s. Further discussion? Representative, former Representative Krupp, I think, wants to be heard. Please come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, former State Representative Jeff Krupp, director of the Northwest Renewable Fuels Association. I've actually chatted with our members regarding the provision on the governor's authority, and and Representative Berger, we would respectfully disagree with you that it is not something we think is important for the governor to have, because we believe that the prior experiences in other states have shown that the elements necessary to ensure the successful flow of commercialized biofuels in the state of Oregon have been addressed, such as testing, those types of issues, which were the problem that we saw occurred actually in several instances, more related to biodiesel than ethanol. So in that regard, after having chatted with our members about it, they felt this is unnecessary, and we would oppose it.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, you oppose it because you think it's unnecessary. What if you're wrong? I mean, what does it hurt you, I guess, is what's the harm?
Well, the issue is that we feel that there might potentially be, actually, it's a side issue. It's a side issue that there may be those who do not believe that biofuels is a good thing, could use this as a vehicle, quite frankly, because I don't think there's adequate language in here to explain what would be flow of a disruption of flow, commercial activities, those types of things, that would be a subject for endless court cases that would drive us to the place of, in fact, forcing a governor to, through lawsuit in the courts, to suspend the RFS. I don't think that's an appropriate strategy, and I'm concerned that frankly, that language, as broad as it is, gives that opportunity for that to occur, and that creates a real issue for our members.
Thank you.
I respectfully disagree.
Further questions? The motion on the floor is the dash A9s on House Bill 2210. I think we better call the roll. Motion not having received the required majority has failed, and I'm ready for a motion on the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
We have amended House Bill 2210.
Yes.
The A1, the A7.
Correct.
Amendment. I move that we move 2210 to the House floor with due pass recommendation.
Representative Butler moves House Bill 2210 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Please call the roll.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. And the bill, having received the required majority, will go to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Dingfelder, would you like to carry the bill?
I'd be honored to co-carry it, possibly with the chair.
You want me to co-carry it with you? Well, you'll go first.
Revenue
questions come up, and I can...
Thank you. I'll answer the tough revenue questions. Thank you, Representative Dinkfelder, and I will carry the bill. And with that, we have completed our business on the work session on House Bill 2210. And we close the work session, and we open a work session on House Bill 2211. What is the status of House Bill 2211?
We have a, Mr. Chair, you should have a dash A6 amendment.
Give us all a chance to sort through here for a second. A6 amendment. Oh, I don't have it.
We don't have the A6. Which ones?
A6, he says.
A6.
They're coming now. They're coming. Are they? Okay, good. This one is shorter, I hope.
Yes, Mr. Chair. The dash A6 simply adds a sunset date to the business energy tax credit referenced in House Bill 2211.
A sunset? What a concept.
We started thought of that.
All right. So go ahead and show us how that fits. And
in... At the end of the bill, sections 9 through 12 are added or modified, and the sunset date is January 1, 2016, meaning that in order to use the credit, the business would have to use it in a tax year beginning prior to January 2016, so effectively a tax year 2015 or earlier.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, discussion.
Representative Butler.
Thank you. For a fiscal corporation, fiscal year corporation, or fiscal year taxpayer of any kind, whose fiscal year commences after June 30, that corporation could actually be employing on July 30th of 2015. And even though its fiscal year ends in 2017, it actually must proceed forward with the taxable event arising under Senate or House Bill 2210 before the January 1st, 2016. Is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you. So even though its calendar year carries over into 2017, the activity must have commenced and been actually deployed prior to January 1st, 2016.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. The Section 12 here refers to the final certification, and that's, I believe, the piece that you're referencing. And for fiscal year filers, it would be their 2015 tax return on which they would claim the credit, which would spill over into 2016.
Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Further questions? Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
I am making a motion that we pass or that we append the dash A6 amendment to House Bill 2211, dated 2/15/07.
Thank you. Representative Butler moves the dash A6 amendments to House Bill 2211. Is there further discussion? Representative Berger.
Only to say
after
that I
comment,
am.
Comment, you better have
Mr. Chair, I am firmly in favor of this sunset. Just wanted that on the record.
Thank you, Representative Berger. Further discussion? Are there objections to the A6 amendment? Hearing none, A6 is adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Conversation. Yes, Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, with the A6 appended to 2211, House Bill 2211, I move House Bill 2211 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Butler moves House Bill 2211 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion of this motion? It's been a while since we've actually heard this bill because we keep pushing it forward.
I particularly like the cooking oil myself.
So. You did. Okay. Seeing none, call the roll.
Aye.
Representative
Bruin. Aye. Representative Butler.
Aye.
Representative
Seltzer.
Aye.
Representative
Olson.
Aye.
Representative Wade.
Aye.
Representative
Wilkenbaum.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. We have two other matters to deal with on this bill, and we should have done that on the other one as well, and we'll reopen for that purpose in a minute. The first item is to find a carrier for the bill. Who would prefer to carry this one?
Well, that's a great sunset clause.
It does. It now has a great sunset clause.
You want me to carry this bill, Mr. Chair? I would be honored and privileged to carry this bill.
Thank you. Representative Berger will carry the bill. The other matter that we need to deal with, and we need to deal with them because of our rules when we change and increase tax credits, is to deal with the issue of policy statement and matrices. We have a proposal from the Energy Department on that issue. And I think it would behoove us to take a couple of minutes to look at that. And I know it's in here somewhere. And to adopt as a matter of policy that these are the measures that we want to be used. And we will ask then, if they are adopted, we will ask the Department of Revenue to include them in their statement in the tax expenditures manual later. I think this is the right procedure for us to go through. It's a matter of going on the record as favoring these proposals, and I have them in front of me from February 15th. Do others have them? And there is a memorandum, and there also is a separate statement of them.
Those were the matrices that we discussed with regard to 2211 and 2212.
Correct.
Probably in my 2212.
And they were previously discussed, according to my records.
Yes, they were. We talked about them briefly.
There they.
What they were is the matrices on the business energy tax credit were the number of eligible energy efficient and renewable energy systems installed by businesses, the amount of energy saved or produced in million BTUs, annual dollar value of the energy saved or produced, tons of CO2 emission avoided, capital invested in energy efficiency and renewable energy projects, and total average payback period and return on investment. Those are the ones that were proposed by the Department of Energy. One of the reasons they proposed these particular ones, as I understand it, is that these are things that they're already prepared to measure, and they won't by themselves have an additional fiscal impact. I'm getting a nod on that. So they're expecting to evaluate these things anyway, and it will give us a way, or our successors a way, in 2015 or 2013, when they look at the sunset, to determine whether or not they want to extend it. What's your pleasure? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The only question that I had with regard to both the matrix for 2211 as well as that of 2212 was that as we talk about the amount of energy saved or produced, and particularly with regard to the amount produced under these alternative energy formats and schemes, will that be reported back to the governor and be used in the 25-25 calculation?
That's a very good question. I don't know the answer to that. Mr. Graney, do you want to come and answer that question?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, Mike Graney from the Department of Energy. If I understand your question correctly, you're talking about the 25% goal by the year 2025.
Renewable energy.
Renewable energy. Yes, measures that for involve electricity generation that use, it would be principally the business tax credit. I don't know if we'd have much use of the residential tax credit on that scale, but those would definitely be included. That's correct, Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Further discussion of this? I would entertain a motion that it's a sense of the committee that these matrices are adopted as our benchmarks for use in review of this tax credit when it comes up for sunset review.
Mr. Chair, are you looking for a motion as to 2211 and 2212?
Yes, 2211.
Okay.
We're open on work session on 2211.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is certainly outside the scope of the passage of the bill, but certainly with regard to the tax expenditures book, as well as the whole list of the items that are kept, that now the Department of Energy will be joining on, I would move that the matrix is presented on behalf of the Department of Energy of February 15th of 07, the list of the seven items under 2211 relative to the business energy tax credit matrix be accepted by the committee for the employment and use of measurement of the effectiveness of the VETC energy tax credits that we're talking about.
Thank you. That's a great motion. Everyone understand the motion? Representative Berger.
I understand the motion perfectly, but I haven't got a memo on February 15th. I've got one on February 14th.
Oh, the memo.
Sir, I'm looking at the wrong memo, or there's two memos.
Actually, there's a list that I received on the 15th.
Oh, yeah, but it doesn't have a date.
The memo is probably dated the 14th. It's the same list, isn't it?
Yes.
Can we amend your motion to say the 14th?
I would so move.
Thank you. We're on the same list.
On the same page, right. The reason we're having this conversation is this is the process that the Ways and Means subcommittees routinely go through when they consider these kinds of issues on the budgetary expenditures, and these are tax expenditures, and we're trying to move ourselves in the direction of similar kind of matrices. I think it needs to be understood that in addition to Representative Butler's motion and the issues raised in the list of proposed matrices, that the energy Department of Energy should feel free to bring in any other measures that may bear on this question. When it comes time to consider the extension of the sunset date or anything else involving these tax credits.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and we would feel free to do so and take that direction as guidance.
Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, the motion is adopted, and our business being concluded on House Bill 2211, the work session on House Bill 2211 is closed. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2212. Thank you, Mr. Green.
Thank you.
House Bill, what's the status of House Bill 2212?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there are no amendments to House Bill 2212.
Okay, no amendments have been proposed on House Bill 2212.
Correct. So there have been no changes since it was last discussed on the 9th of February.
Thank you. What's your pleasure,
Mr. Chair?
Representative Gelson.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2212A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gelser moves House Bill 2212 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair.
Discussion. Representative Butler.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, do we want to discuss the matrix? So is the 2212 as a part of that motion?
If you like. It isn't really going to the floor. The matrix doesn't actually go to the floor, although it might be discussed there. But it's certainly reasonable to discuss it while we're discussing passing the motion.
Mr. Chair, I think that it would be appropriate. Again, you have similar kinds of issues relative to the numbers of residential energy tax credits. And while Mr. Graney has already explained that these will not be used towards the 2525, I'm anxious that they should be. Because the amount of energy that's actually produced for consumption by residences at some point in Oregon's future, we're probably going to have electrical meters that run backwards. And I think that that's a I think that's a valid thing that should be measured and considered as we move forward.
Thank you. I think there are some that actually run backwards now, at least during certain times of the day when the sun is out. Is there further discussion of the motion, Representative Gelster's motion, which is to send House Bill 2212 to the floor with a due pass recommendation? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Representative Butler.
Aye.
Representative Broome.
Aye.
Representative Butler.
Aye.
Representative Walton.
Aye.
Representative
Olson.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative
Barzilai.
Aye.
Representative
Wood. Aye. Chair votes aye. Representative Gelser, would you carry this bill?
Sure.
Thank you. Representative Gelser will carry the bill. Mr. Chair. Representative Butler.
I move the House Bill 2212. Residential energy tax code metrics that have been presented to us by Mr. Graney under letter date of February the 14th and as received by yourself on February the 15th.
Thank you. Further discussion of these matrices, these are very similar to the ones that we just discussed under 2211. Is there an objection to the motion? Hearing none, the motion is adopted. We will close the work session on House Bill 2212 and reopen the work session on House Bill 2210 because we didn't deal with the matrices on House Bill 2210. And we have a similar memo from Mr. Graney on House Bill 2210 dated February 14th with similar matrices. What's your pleasure? Let me just read them. The proposed matrices include the number of vehicles using B100 or E85 fuel, number of homes using high-efficiency wood stoves or B20 for heating, amount of gasoline or diesel replaced in vehicles in gallons, amount of fossil fuel displaced by wood stoves, and amount of heating oil displaced by B20, the amount of fossil energy displaced in million BTUs, the annual dollar value of the biofuel energy consumed, tons of CO2 emissions avoided, and total average payback period / return on investment. Those are the items suggested by the Department of Energy. And again, these are ones that they intended to measure anyway, and it would simply be a matter of formalizing it for the purposes of our later review. Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, I move the House Bill 2210 matrix that have been provided to us, the proposed matrix that were provided to us under letter dated February 14, 2007 by Michael Graney.
Thank you. Further discussion? Other objections? Hearing none, it is so ordered. We will close the public hearing, or excuse me, the work session on House Bill 2210. And having exhausted our agenda for the day, we are adjourned.